Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sport Intern Special with me, Ashish Sharma, a series of podcasts in which we speak to the movers and shakers within the Olympic movement. And in this episode, we speak to one of the giants of the International Olympic Committee, in fact, its longest serving member. Richard Pound, better known as Dick Pound, was in his time a former Canadian swimming champion. He served the IOC in various positions, most notably as its vice president, before then becoming the first president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. Well, we began our chat with Dick telling me about the importance of the role that Juan Antonio Samaranch played when he was the president of the IOC.
I think he realized three things probably. One is that the Olympic movement was actually surprisingly resilient in the face of the enormous pressure put on by the U.S. In relation to the Moscow boycott. Sort of a subset of that was that we, the Olympic movement, had to stick together if there would be a divide and conquer approach. That was not good. Secondly, that if you're going to be a worldwide organization, you've got to have the whole world as part of it. So he set about expanding the number of national Olympic committees, making it easy for some of the smaller countries to have one, and recognizing that even if you're underwater at high tide, you're nevertheless an important part of the whole. And so, you know, we've now got to the point of 206 national Olympic committees in the world. So that's a statistic. And the third, and most central in terms of what I ended up doing, was that the IOC had to become solvent. It had to have its own sources of funding, because governments could not be depended upon to do that. I guess the Los Angeles television deal for 84, which was done before Samaranch became president, indicated that there really was a lot of potential out there. And it was important for the IOC to step in and start to assert some control over that. I mean, we were so impecunious and risk adverse in the early days of television the IOC said, oh my goodness, we don't understand this medium. We may make some mistake and somebody may sue us. And so we kind of punted to each organizing committee and said, you go out and do the negotiations. We'll take a share of what you get, but you know, it'll be a contract that you sign, and we'll countersign it, but you're the main party. The 1988 games, which were negotiated, the negotiations were joint. We couldn't do anything on our own, and the organizing committee couldn't do anything on its own.
How do you view then the current scenario that the IOC faces, looking at Russia, Belarus, and Paris just looming round the corner, having gone through what you had to in terms of boycotts, you know, that you had with Russia, with the US?
Well, Thomas is running a very difficult game at the moment. I mean, we've got the aspirational perspective of sport. This is an opportunity to come together even in times of trouble and strife and that sort of thing, which is a nice and good idea, but it's running head on into the political reality, mainly, at least for the moment, centered in Europe, saying, no, if this war is still going on, and the Soviets or the Russians and the Belarusians are there, we're not. And I don't know what the solution is. My personal feeling, and this is not official IOC policy, but if that war is still going on next year, Russia and Belarus will not be there.
Do you take some sympathy yourself, having been an Olympic athlete as well, which I think always gives it a very different perspective, you know, those who are on the side of authority and organization, but haven't actually been athletes as well, perhaps don't have that feeling, like even, you know, like Thomas himself, having suffered from a boycott. Do you have the sympathy for those athletes that come from those countries who really have no interest, no involvement, no support for the war, but are actually seeing their careers kind of disappearing before them because they may end up not being able to take part in the Olympics?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a criminal offense these days in Russia to be not in favor of the war. And of course, you know, one of the funding mechanisms that has existed in Russia going back to the Soviet days is that a lot of these athletes, you know, are employed by the police force or the military or that sort of thing, as state agencies, and that's somewhat more awkward. But yeah, no, I'm certainly sympathetic, but you know, it's old people like us that send young people to go and get killed in wars. That's the way the world seems to work.
And in terms of the way things are working for the IOC now, with Thomas Bach into his presidency, but there's a lot of movement on the sides as to who could become the next IOC president. I note always with great interest that at World Athletics, for example, Sebastian Coe, Lord Coe, seems to always be taking a slightly different position, and you wonder whether is he playing a game, you know, looking at positioning himself in a different light, so that perhaps he could offer something different. How do you see the evolution of the IOC over the next 4 or 5 years in terms of who will govern it and who will lead it?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting conundrum at the moment. I mean, Sebastian, with, you know, now that we have a retirement age of 70, I mean, he wouldn't even be able to go a single 8-year term. So whether there's any appetite to change that or not, I don't know. I guess the closer you are to 70, the more likely you would be to
change it.
So kind of the way that Samranch did when he increased the age twice, so that he could keep running. And then the other question is, you know, we've now had 9 IOC presidents, all white, all male, all European except for one. You know, is that a sustainable model for an international organization? And we've got some very talented women, you know, in the mix now. And some talented men as well. So far, basically all white. But anyway, so that's a dynamic that's in the process of playing out, and we'll have to see. We've got a session coming up in Mumbai, so you know that's a little closer to. But basically, it's. You know, for Thomas, it will be, I guess Paris will be his penultimate year. But, you know, we're very close. It's 2025. And I don't think he has any appetite to change the charter so that he can, you know, have another term. But things may evolve.
When that cycle for the presidential elections comes around, do you reflect still today on when you try to run for the presidency in, I think it was 2001, where Jack Roger ended up becoming the president? Is that something that is a regret of yours, or is a sort of sliding doors moment? You know, what if you could have been the president? What different changes might you have made? Or do you kind of feel, well, things worked out for what they were meant to be?
Yeah, I think, I mean, my feeling is that up until probably a year or so before that, I would have been Sam Ranch's choice president. But I think he got worried about the growing influence of Kim Un-yong, and knew enough about him that he didn't think that would be a good idea, and fell back on the blood is thicker than water, and said, well, you know, the answer is to have another European, and we've had a if you chart these things, we've had a kind of a history of, you know, after a dominant president like Avery Brundage, you know, we sort of paused to gather breath and had, you know, Kilanen, who was not a powerhouse. And then after him was, after Kilanen was Sam Ranch, 21 years of very, very dominant president. And did we need to have another rest? And Jacques was not going to take any serious steps. I mean, he actually said the thing he was proudest of in 12 years of Olympic presidency were the Youth Olympic Games. And I can tell you that if I had been president, there would be no Youth Olympic Games. So I think it's, you know, basically it's expensive, and it really doesn't add anything to the structure of international sport. And they were first marketed domestically within the IOC as the response of the Olympic movement to sedentary, you know, life on the part of young people and diabetes and so forth. You know, get the couch potatoes off the couch. Except you had to be a member of a national federation in order to be eligible for the Youth Olympic Games. So, I mean, not a single couch potato moved. Anyway, that was disappointing. And I think we probably could have developed a sharper focus on you know, the transition from, you know, the 14 or 16-year-old to the 20-year-old person able to handle and compete in the Olympics.
And that was Dick Pound, the longest serving member of the IOC. In the second part of our conversation, he will be talking to us about the role he played in setting up WADA. In the meantime, don't forget, you can catch up with all the latest news from the Olympic movement by subscribing to the Sport Inter newsletter produced every day, Monday to Friday. Until the next time, stay safe